The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost effective, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.
Multiple federal agencies are probing Morgan Stanley's wealth arm. And will domestic incentives attract AI workers to the U.S.?
Subsidies aren't enough. The U.S. has to be a competitive place to do business, and that involves keeping costs low, you know, making sure that plants can be built quickly and to very demanding specifications, that the suppliers arrive here, and that the workforce is available. That is a lot of steps of this process to get right before we can say that this reshoring process will be successful.
Plus, O.J. Simpson, whose murder trial spurred a national debate over race and criminal justice, has died at the age of 76. It's Thursday, April 11th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. On last night's show, we talked about how hotter than anticipated inflation could change the Federal Reserve's plans for interest rate cuts later this year. As a reminder, the Labor Department said the Consumer Price Index rose 3.5% in March from a year earlier, and it was not what analysts were expecting. We also started to get into the political implications of persistent price pressures and what they mean for President Biden. It is an election year after all, and inflation continues to be a stubborn political problem for the president. Joining me now with more is Wall Street Journal markets and economics reporter Sam Goldfarb. Welcome back, Sam.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So Sam, it sounds like this is a little tricky for President Biden. How is he trying to hit the right messaging about the economy?
Inflation has been one of Biden's biggest political problems for a while now. And so what he's been trying to say is that inflation has gotten a lot better in the last couple of years, but that there's still more work to do. So he tries to talk about how he has certain policies that could help lower prices. In reality, these are pretty small bore policies that probably wouldn't have a major impact on overall prices. But he's trying to say that he's working hard, and they're also trying to send optimistic signals that inflation will come down, and also trying to say that his opponent, former President Trump, his policies would be worse for inflation.
Are voters buying it? Is that message resonating with them?
I guess the simple answer would be no. His polling on this issue is pretty bad. Even though the rate of inflation has come down over the past year, the Wall Street Journal had a recent poll which said that roughly 3/4 of voters in swing states said that inflation had gone in the wrong direction over the past year. So people are still pretty downbeat on this issue, for sure.
As a bit of a reality check, what practically can the White House do to combat price pressures? Are there things that the administration hasn't done that it can to help bring this pressure down?
So again, to put it pretty simply, there's not much of anything that they can do. They can try to lower prescription drug costs through policies, but that is something that would take a long time and would just be one small thing. And conceivably, an economist could think that they could pass basically policies that would slow down economic growth by like raising taxes a lot. That could bring down inflation by like causing a recession, but no one's talking about that. Biden doesn't think that would be good for his political fortunes.
Sam, we've started to get into this already, but what does this all mean for the likely rematch with Donald Trump?
So President Biden, to the extent that he wants to talk about inflation, he's going to try to broaden it out to economic policies as a whole. And he's going to try to make it into, you know, a comparison. So they want to talk about how Republicans have plans to cut taxes on wealthier Americans and on big businesses. They think that that is a winning message for them. And they also want to make the case that Trump has these plans to raise tariffs, and they're arguing that that would make inflation worse.
That's Wall Street Journal markets and economics reporter Sam Goldfarb. We report exclusively that multiple federal regulators are probing Morgan Stanley over how the bank vets clients who are at risk of laundering money through its wealth management division. People familiar with the matter say the Securities and Exchange Commission, the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, and other Treasury Department offices are involved. That's on top of a similar probe by the Federal Reserve. The main issues regulators are looking at boil down to whether Morgan Stanley has been sufficiently investigating the identities of prospective clients and where their wealth comes from, as well as how how it monitors its clients' financial activity. Some of the probes are focused on the bank's international clients. When asked about some of the regulatory scrutiny in January, Morgan Stanley's former CEO and current executive chairman, James Gorman, told the Journal the bank is investing in compliance, technology, and AI to better understand the flow of money tied to its wealth business. O.J. Simpson, the football star and Hollywood celebrity accused of killing his ex-wife, has died at the age of 76. Simpson was acquitted in a sensational 1990s trial that became a landmark moment in the national debate over race and criminal justice. Simpson's accomplishments as one of the greatest running backs in college and professional football history were overshadowed by his 1994 arrest following a nationally televised police chase for allegedly killing his ex-wife, Nicole Brown Simpson, and her friend Ronald Goldman. Simpson died Wednesday from cancer, according to a post on his X account, which was attributed to the Simpson family. Coming up, the U.S. will need lots of workers to build up its domestic semiconductor industry. How companies are going about recruiting after the break.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
Last week, we talked about a big investment in artificial intelligence and the Midwest. South Korea's SK Hynix, a partner of NVIDIA's, is spending nearly $4 billion to build an advanced chip packaging facility in West Lafayette, Indiana. It's the largest corporate investment in the state's history. Plans for the semiconductor complex include a fabrication plant, or fab, to package high-bandwidth memory chips used in AI, and a connected research and development center. So, who's going to staff it? Joining me now with more is Wall Street Journal chief economics commentator Greg Ipp. Greg, one way SK Hynix is looking to recruit is through a partnership with Purdue University, which you visited. How can the university support this plan?
Well, Purdue is doing a number of things to help SK Hynix with its semiconductor investment plans. First of all, it owns the land that semiconductor fab will be built upon. SK Hynix is also building a research and development center, and Purdue will be offering research collaboration to staff up that center. Now, the whole thing is about 4 years away from opening, so they have time. But in order to make sure they have those people in a few years' time, SK Hynix, Purdue, and the federal government, which has been going around subsidizing these plants, are all trying to make sure that there are work streams in place to create the necessary specialists, especially engineers, who can work in places like this. And that is what you see at Purdue. They've created a series of undergraduate and graduate programs and certification programs that are aimed to sort of like enable people to acquire the necessary interests and skills should they desire to go work in the semiconductor industry.
Will SK Hynix need to go beyond the university for recruiting workers?
Well, first of all, you cannot commit somebody to go work for a particular company when they enter college. So the people who are studying at Purdue may not necessarily be the ones who go to work at SK Hynix, and the people that SK Hynix hires may not necessarily come from Purdue. The overall idea here is that by close cooperation between the state, the federal government, the industry, and universities, that you elevate the overall level of output of these types of people with the special degrees. Now, the industry is very like complex industry, and different skills are needed throughout. And historically, some of the tasks that were done in the semiconductor industry, some were very low-end, and these were done in low-wage countries, and some were high-end, and these were done in more advanced countries, and those were the ones that generally required degrees. In West Lafayette, the plant that SK Hynix is building will need a mixture of both.
Greg, I mean, this sounds to me like a very big challenge, obviously huge investment here, but it is essentially trying to build back up an industry that's shrunk substantially in the United States.
It really is. And there's a bit of a chicken-egg problem, if I could put it that way. So the U.S. used to be a leader in designing and making chips. In 1990, for example, 37% of semiconductors around the world were fabricated in the United States. By 2020, that figure had fallen to 12%. And at the same time, the share made in Taiwan, South Korea, and China went up to 58%. Now, some of that movement to Asia was because we're an expensive place to manufacture. But some of it was just a business choice because the business model, the industry changed. Companies preferred to focus on designing, and they outsourced the fabrication of the chips to these companies that happened to be based in Asia. So in theory, you could reverse that process if you, for example, match the subsidies that these companies in Asia have, which is exactly what the federal government seeks to do. But at the same time, how do you bring the people back, though, right? South Korea and Taiwan now have a really large, almost captive labor pool of excellent workers, engineers who go and work in these fabs. The United States doesn't have anything now, and you won't until young people here see the industry as a place that they want to work, one that's at least as comparable as some of the other exciting fields that are available to. So that's why I mean by chicken egg problem. If you don't have the workers, the fabs won't come, but if you don't have the fabs, the workers won't come.
That's Wall Street Journal chief economics commentator Greg Ipp. The war in Ukraine is the first to prominently feature small drones. But drones from U.S. startups have so far failed to perform in combat. Company executives, Ukrainians on the front lines, Ukrainian government officials, and former U.S. defense officials say they've proven to be expensive, glitchy, and hard to repair. Our technology reporter Heather Somerville explains.
One of the reasons is that American startups tend to make drones that are for commercial purposes to sell to utility companies and to farmers. Another reason for that is that the U.S. Department of Defense has standards for drones that the U.S. military uses that does not consider electronic warfare. So what we discovered is that DoD requirements for our own drones in the U.S. are frankly behind the times.
Without solutions from the West, Ukraine's turned to alternatives, including cheaper drones from China. And that's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. Today's show was produced by Anthony Bansi, with supervising producer Michael Kosmides. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back with a new show tomorrow morning.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.